Hello, hello, and welcome back to Gaining a Wiser Mind, a podcast where you learn more about PPD. You may be a fellow PPD sufferer, you know, come along for the ride, learn more about yourself, find something to resonate with, and last but not least, breaking the stigma around PPD. So, last session we talked all about emotions and how heightened and sudden dysregulated they are for those suffering with PPD. And as promised, today we are going to talk about why those emotions are so big and where they're coming from and what the heck you can do about them. So come along for the ride. Let's get talking. Alright, so as we noted last session, we really established that these emotions can become really overpowering for those suffering with BPD. They can take over their body, and also these emotions can actually take a huge effect on those people that are around BPD sufferers. For example, whether it's their partners, their friends, close family, and even their work life. So it's really important to take note of how these emotions are there and where they root from, in order to help yourself and also the relationships you have, so it doesn't become massive turmoil and it all goes sour. So if you're listening and you're suffering with BPD, you can probably relate immensely to having these emotions and actually feeling guilty for reacting the way you do, but you're stuck in this hole, in this cycle, and many people with BPD are stuck in there until they start the process of recovery. So here we are, we're going to chat about it, and maybe you can make the first steps into understanding why you are the way you are and what you can do next. So this overpowering emotion can take over many things, as I've just said, but where this actually comes from, this overwhelming feeling where you get triggered by something so small and then act out way bigger than you should have, actually roots from childhood or past experiences, which is hard to, you know, reflect on. And all of us can relate to this because we all have things that happened in our childhood that affect the way we are today. But for BPD, I find their heavy reactions come down to some serious childhood-rooted issues. For example, it may be something as small as when you were younger or even a teen, you introduced a serious topic to your parents or someone close to you that was really heavy for you and emotional, and it was dismissed, or you were told to get over yourself, move on. And for someone that's highly sensitive, you'll just shut down and say, okay, I'll never open up to anyone again. And this might begin to make you have a belief that you are not important enough. You are not important enough to be listened to or loved, which seems really extravagant, but these beliefs begin like that, and that's how they become ingrained. Too many incidents in childhood informed your belief, and then that is where you are. So let's look into what a belief is in terms of this and where you can go after that. So a belief is an idea or principle that we judge to be true, and it's developed over time from experiences, thoughts, feelings, and memories. So when unhealthy beliefs and behaviours come together, they then create these negative response patterns. And these patterns are what I have began to talk about, what causes the turmoil in relationships and the, you know, the conflict or the unresolved situations, is because these patterns are what are causing the continual problems. Patterns are groups of behaviours, and over time they actually become your default or automatic responses to your beliefs, people, and situations. So that's all pretty wordy. I do that. I get a bit wordy, but long story short, your beliefs drive your behaviors. So, okay, well, it's always helpful to have an example to, you know, kind of imagine what this all means. So, let's say what I was talking about before, when you were younger, you often tried to, you know, let out how you were feeling and actually express something that was heavy to you and it was dismissed, and over time your belief becomes, I'm not important enough to be loved. So that's the belief, okay? Not important enough to be loved, that's ingrained in them, in their brain, it's what they think and feel. So because one has this belief, if they are in a strong relationship or friendship or anything, their belief will inform behaviors such as badgering people, always trying to understand if people actually care about them, needing physical and verbal validation to prove this. They might also overcompensate. They might leave messages or calls and tell them over and over about how much they love them. Do things to prove how valuable they are in their lives, like the other person's life. Asking over and over for a specific affection and validation, just to see how much someone loves them. They all love someone so, so hard in order to be loved back, because their belief is that they're not important enough to be loved. So already here you can see this is a negative response pattern. Because of that belief, you go through these behaviors in order to feel fulfilled, which has short-term benefits. Like, of course, you know, you're going to get to see that person, you'll get to hear them say that they love you back, or they care about you, or they're always here for you. It makes you feel heard and recognized. Like, those are some cool benefits, man. Like, hell yeah, I'll do this negative pattern every day if it means I get fulfilled. But here we go again, you know. There's these benefits, but there's always long-term consequences, okay? So this negative pattern might seem like great, but if you actually really are, you know, about to get on the road to recovery, you got to note that these won't always be super beneficial. Yeah. Even though it's pretty much like your life, like these things were, still are, my life, these patterns, and it's just trying to figure out how to get that out of your head. So, talking about the long-term consequences, so you have this belief, and you're trying to prove to someone how much you love them so that they'll love you back, because, you know, that's the pattern, I mean, that's the pattern, because you are believing that you're not important enough to be loved, so you'll over love, so you get love back, da da da, and you get all these benefits, you get them all in, but the long-term consequences are either that for them, their consequence is the fact that they're going to get overwhelmed, the relationship or friendship or anything might be getting toxic for him or her, so that's not great. And for you especially, through all this, you know, neediness, in quotation marks, you may become needy or clingy, eventually that person may leave. This will actually strengthen the original core belief. The core belief that you had about not being important enough to be loved. You did so much to try and get this love that in reality, you know, ironically, that made them leave. That is just putting you back into the cycle. You're stuck in it because it's proved your belief. It must be true. It must be true. But this is actually a false proof. So we're going to talk about how to challenge these things. And far out, I don't think it's easy. Like, this is something that would probably take people a bazillion years. I don't know if any normal human could get this right. But it, you know, you got to try. So in order to challenge these things, what can we do? Let's talk about it. Well, how do we stop these behaviors? How? The million-dollar question. Well, the way to stop them is to challenge their belief. Wow, who could have guessed it? Man, this is going to be so easy. Yeah, no, never. It's the absolute hardest part, okay? But the first important step is, in order to control or change, you need to be aware of what you're thinking and doing, which is actually, I think, one of the trickiest things to do. You know, you can say all this stuff, but it's actually hard to pinpoint what you do and be aware of what you're thinking when you do things. Like, holy cow, that takes a lot of conscious effort, and I personally don't have that. I think it takes a lot of work. People probably don't realize how challenging this is for people with BPD to do, is trying to retrack what they're actually doing, because it becomes such a huge part of them and their personality that it's just the way you roll. It's not something you can control. It's something that escalates. If you go to therapy, you know, they'll have the answers for you, and they'll say, okay, yeah, identify the trigger, this is what you need to do, and you'll spend months and months and months talking about the same thing, and both you and the therapist will know this is what you need to do, but it's easier said than done. It's like putting theory into practice. A lot of the time you have to do it in the state where you are, you know, sane, or in what some people would say is an adult ego state, which we can talk about in future episodes. But when you have that more, I don't know, mature and rational hat on, you have to take a moment to be aware of what you're thinking and doing, and that is the hardest part. So this is how we do the work on retraining your brain in triggering situations. Okay, so let's just think back to do this. Let's just do it. Let's do it together. So if you are a BPD sufferer, like, let's just have a moment and do this together. Or if you are a person that is working with someone that is suffering with the illness, think back to a time where they maybe exploded a little. Okay. So we're thinking back to a situation where our emotions got too much, and that's when your negative behaviors take over. Your emotions are just exploding at the seams, and then these negative behaviors that you go to, which is your, you know, your automatic response, it just takes over, and you do some things that you're probably not really super stoked about when you're out of that headspace. So say in this situation, someone close to you has just called you out for something, who knows what, you know, but they've called you out for something, and, you know, straight away, you just explode. The anger button's pressed, you're just so, so angry, you get defensive, you get, you know, upset, and straight away your brain's like, so I'm never good enough, and you're suddenly asking them, what else do you do, why are you even here, why do you want to be around me? Why are you friends with me? Why do you even talk to me? If I'm always mucking stuff up, I'm almost mucking stuff up. Like, there's something wrong with me. And then that turns into, you know, anger at them, but at the same time, inward anger at yourself. And it gets angry. It gets angry. So it's either, you know, also all verbal. Sometimes it can get physical. I personally don't know of anyone hurting other people. I don't think BPD are violent people. If anything, they're violent towards themselves, so that might even turn into harming themselves, not knowing how to cope. So, and then later on, after this whole incident, that turns into major shame and guilt. There's all these apologies, you know, and later on you're trying to prove how sorry you are. You're trying to prove and do everything, and this actually ends up having a negative effect, you know, a strain on the relationship as well, or the people around you. So, okay, it's going back to that situation, right, and rewriting that step-by-step process your brain likes to follow, as it's informed by the belief that you originally have. But this is what you need to challenge. So how do we really rewrite the script? Also, just while you're listening, if you took a shot for every time I said so, you wouldn't be doing well right now. I need to find a little a better connective. Anyway, how do we rewrite the script? So there is a really cool mental health website. It's a New Zealand website that's informing about mental health. There's a bit of religious stuff on there, which is cool. I think it links back to a lot of religion, but this article that I found, the first part was really beneficial. So I'll share it with you because it's related to what we are talking about and, where to go. They have this article about cognitive distortions. These inform negative behaviors. These were introduced by someone called David Burns, I think. He did something about a mood therapy, and he outlines these common mistakes in thinking, called cognitive distortions. So we're gonna go through them all. There's about 10. I'm just gonna read what they've got here. And maybe in future episodes we could choose one of these thoughts or distortions, as he calls them, and we can talk about our experiences with them. Maybe I can, have a chat to some of you and find out about, which one you relate to the most, and an example of this, to unpack it further. As today, I'll just read them all out, and you can see if you resonate or you know someone that really clearly fits the bill. I know there'll be a few people listening that might say I fit the bill, but here we go. So number one is all about all or nothing thinking. If you have BPD, you already know this one. It's often called black or white thinking in a lot of BPD, readings and online, and people informing those about BPD. It's a common thing called black and white thinking. Anyway, so this David Burns, he calls it all or nothing thinking, seeing things as black and white, never grey. For example, if your performance fails short of perfect, you see yourself as a total failure. So if it's not 100%, it's 0%. Whereas other people probably would have perceived it as like 99.9% right. And you didn't get that 0.1, so goodbye to the fame and fortune. You're just a failure. Anyway, number one, all or nothing thinking. Number two is overgeneralization. So seeing one single negative event as a never-ending pattern, which I actually just touched on. Like feeling like you messed up, which is you just then also believing that you never get anything right, which is not true. It is overgeneralizing. So yeah, that's number two. Number three is mental filter. So you pick out a single negative detail and dwell on it exclusively so that your view of reality becomes darkened, like a drop of ink that discolors an entire glass of water. Now, I think that one is really, really good. I believe many people could actually resonate with that. Negative way of thinking, and I like how it likened it to a drop of ink that discolors a glass of water, because it's this tiny droplet of one negative detail, and it just becomes your whole world. It's what you're consumed by. So that is definitely a cognitive distortion. So yeah, number three. Next is number four, disqualifying the positive. So you reject positive experiences by insisting that they don't count for some reason. And in this way, you continue to see everything as negative, even when your everyday experiences contradict this. I know that I could relate this to someone who has, you maybe have a person in your life, you might have some acquaintances, people that are maybe there for you, but if it's not to the level of closeness that you believe is good, or is as good as a relationship a BPD person may feel as good, the depth, the, you know, all that comes with a strong BPD relationship. If it's not that good enough, you'll just see it as negative. The positive things, those few positive people, they don't count. So disqualifying the positive, that's a good one, okay? I better stop giving like specific examples, otherwise we'll never get through this. But number five is jumping to conclusions, making a negative interpretation, even though there are no definite facts that convincingly support your interpretation. Okay, so A, mind reading. You think that someone is reacting negatively to you and you don't try to check this out with them. Yep, okay. And B, the fortune teller error. So this is anticipating that things will turn out badly and you feel convinced that your prediction is already established fact. Okay, moving on. Number six. Magnification, you know, catastrophizing or minimization. So you exaggerate the importance of things such as your error or someone else's success, or you incorrectly shrink the things until they appear tiny, your own desirable qualities or other people's imperfections. Number seven, emotional reasoning. You believe that your negative emotions reflect the way that things really are. I feel it, therefore it must be true. So true. It happens every day. And many people experience this. It's like, okay, that person didn't talk to me as much as they did yesterday. They said about 72 words and today they only said 12. So they obviously hate me now and I'm a crappy person. Yep. Okay, number eight, should, must, ought to statements. So you try to motivate yourself with shoulds and shouldn'ts as if you had to be whipped and punished before you could be expected to do anything. The emotional consequence are feelings of guilt or being inadequate or wrong. When you tell others they should do something, you feel anger, frustration, and resentment. That's a goodie. That's one that really has to be thought about and deeper unpacked, I feel. Number nine, second to last one, labeling and mislabeling. This is an extreme form of one of the previous ones, overgeneralization. Instead of describing your error, well, here we go, you attach a negative label to yourself. E.g., I'm a loser, instead of, I didn't do that well. When someone else's behavior annoys you, you judge him or her as a loser. Mislabeling is describing an event with harsh emotional or judging statements. That one is a good one to take note of. It talks about, you know, the labeling, mislabeling of yourself, but also of others around you, which a lot of us don't like to admit, but I feel as though we do it. Last but not least, the big whopper, number 10, is personalization. So you blame yourself for being the cause of some negative event for which you were not responsible. So, for example, if something goes wrong and affects others negatively, you take the blame for it and feel bad. So, there is a lot to think about there. Now, you might want to listen to those over again. I know that when I first read these, when I was doing some writing a few weeks back, I just felt so personally attacked. I was like, hey, I didn't know that someone wrote a novel about me. What? Who's been researching me? Who found this mental information from my brain? So, I don't know. I can imagine that if you have BPD, you'll be thinking, oh, I'm turning this off. It's too relatable. I don't want to hear it. Or you're like, oof, what should I do now about these thingies? Or you might know someone with BPD and you're like, yep, that's them. But cool to know more about it and cool to know that this is a real thing that's been talked about, and you know, my experience with this said person makes a lot more sense now, and now myself and them can work together to overcome these common mistakes in thinking and these distortions. So I hope it was beneficial listening to these. I definitely think it's important to go back to them and challenge them. So yes, those are from David Burns, if you want to look into it. Wow, okay, so that was a lot. So overwhelming, I know, lots of information there. I think it might be a good place to end this as well, so you can have a moment to process those, you know, distortions in thinking. See how you relate, see how someone may connect to the, you know, connect to it. And for now, in order to change your beliefs and your negative patterns that drive these big, big emotions, I want you to think for a moment about a situation, you know, a situation that has, you know, made you feel so heightened, and it's been one of those scenarios where your brain starts following this step-by-step process that is a negative pattern. Okay, I want you to think about one of those. And then what you want to do is maybe even physically write out the steps of that process, what occurs, and think about one thing you can change next time that happens. It might be a tiny step, like someone might challenge you and you can see that you're about to go into that phase, and you just really shut your brain down, and like, even if that involves like clenching your jaw and actually asking, okay, this person feels a certain way, let's just take a moment, and maybe even ask, can you explain this calmly to me? I want to, you know, make a difference, so I'm just going to sit back and not explode right now. I don't know, it can be even smaller than that, but have a moment to think about it. And I hope you've gained a bit of an insight today. Alright, thank you folks for listening. I hope you've gained some greater knowledge, gained a bit of a wiser mind. We're going to finish up here, and you know, there'll be another session sometime soon. Make sure to follow on Instagram, Gain a Wiser Mind, to, you know, keep updated on when the next podcast episodes are coming out. Some extra posts, you know, we can all have a chat. Might try to get some extra stories from other people that we can relate to what we have been talking about, and get a bit of a wider perspective. So anyway, check that out. Thanks for listening as always. Hope you have a super day, super night, whatever it is. Thank you very much. Ka kite.